Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Event Industry News Podcast with me, James Dixon, wishing you all a very good morning, afternoon or evening, whenever or wherever you're tuning into today's podcast from. We're recording a number of batches in a number of episodes in January, which will be published and broadcast during the spring period. And as always, for context, I like to tell you when we're recording these so that, you know, anything that we may reference is, it has got some sort of clarity to it. So it's Monday, the 15th of January, cold Monday morning, and at 11 a.m., already the third episode of the day that we're recording today. So hopefully I'm fully warmed up and ready to delve into some event industry chat with our guest today, who's a first-time guest on the podcast, and I've got to maybe pause and take a deep breath before introducing my guest's name so that I get it correct. I did ask off-air how to pronounce this correctly, so I shall take a deep breath and say that my guest today is Maria Sidirapoulou. Maria, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. Very good pronunciation. Thank you.
It's very kind of you to say so. And Maria is from Informa Markets. For those of you who are watching today, the video version of the podcast, our guest names and job titles and companies are always captioned below them on the screen. So it says Senior Product Manager at Informa Markets. And we'll maybe find out a little bit more about what that entails, Maria, as we get into this conversation today. But first of all, you know, our guests, I know our guests are curious people. Some may say nosy. People in the events industry always want to find out what other people do in the industry. Tell us a little bit about your own events journey, where you started and how it's led to being in the role that you're at today with Informa.
Yeah, of course. So I've always been very interested in events since a very young age. I was always the one organizing all the birthday parties and reunions and all of that, but I never thought about it professionally. I basically came to the event industry almost by accident. But once I started, I basically absolutely loved it. And I do believe it's an industry where you either love it or you hate it. It's, you know, quite unique. I've started my events journey as a sales and marketing administrator about 12 years ago. And I had a lot of different roles throughout the years, majority of them balancing, let's say, commercial needs and attendee engagement. And the last couple of years, I made a move into product management, still for the event industry, I guess, where a lot around event technology, but still around finding new commercial paths for the business.
Has that role, has that journey from the first positions that you had to where you are now helped you sort of working through the business and working through the process, sort of build up that understanding on a less pressured basis? I've seen some people, and I guess the question kind of goes back to people who study event management now. It's a really common course at degree level that most, you know, a lot of universities, if not all of them, offer some sort of event management style learning program and degree. Do you find that your own journey has been productive because you've been able to sort of learn different roles and move through it up to the level that you're at now?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I actually don't know that many people that they studied event management and they work in the events industry, at least not the exhibition world. I think I can probably count them in one hand. I studied business management, so I was always very curious around, you know, business, and I grew up in a business-oriented family as well. But then once I got into events, you know, had this sales and marketing role, and then there was quite a lot of pressure in the wider environment of picking a path. You need to go through the sales path or marketing or ops or content, just pick one and go for it. But I always really enjoyed basically, you know, having all my fingers in different pies, as people say, and getting involved in the different functions, understanding the customers, and basically what the different functions basically do. So I never actually picked a path. So I've been lucky enough to work for a brand that it was quite innovative. It grew through the years, so I had the opportunity to grow basically with it. But I think I had so many different roles that they almost all sat in between the traditional functions, but it really gave me the experience I have today in, you know, what it means to deliver an event, what it takes from a different from the different functions. And yeah, absolutely loved it.
And what does your role entail now? You know, people see a job title, but often a job title is, you know, it doesn't tell people exactly what somebody may do on a day-to-day basis. A senior product manager, what does that actually mean for you?
Yeah, so, you know, again, it can mean a lot of different things. There is senior product managers within Informa at the moment that they do very different things. For example, the first year as a senior product manager, I've spent on essentially trying to improve the customer experience when it comes to customer-facing technology and finding new commercial opportunities around the event. So that entailed, you know, it got quite technical at certain phases around integrations and essentially, you know, utilizing the technology in the benefit of the customer. And creating a seamless experience. So that was essentially the first year. And currently, I'm basically trying to find opportunities, commercial opportunities for the business that they're not necessarily linked to the event, and finding the right technology maybe to bring it to market if there's viability. So that can be essentially anything. At the moment, I'm exploring an opportunity around lead qualification and lead management. Again, not necessarily about the event leads, but, you know, lead scoring. Sure. In a 365 environment.
That opens up a whole sort of other line of questioning in terms of the minefield that there is now for event companies and big event companies as well is how they manage the platforms and the technology that's available now. It's even more complex than ever running an event because we've got so many different ways and means that we can analyze, process, develop, register attendees, market the shows. I think more than ever we need people who are dedicated to just exploring these new opportunities because they're developing on a monthly basis now with the technology that we've got.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it changes so fast. And the other challenge I'm seeing is, you know, there is a lot of all-in-one solutions out there. And, you know, you start going through it and you think, oh, yeah, they do have everything. And then as you go into the deployment side of things, so you start looking at it a bit more closely, I think you'll always find gaps of things where you can bring another tool to support it. And I think the biggest challenge is basically, again, that integration between the different platforms so the customer has a seamless experience, which I think it's probably the biggest opportunity for the events industry when it comes to technology on how do you bring it all together and who can basically deliver that for you.
But if you've got teams working beneath you as well who need to understand the various different aspects, the integration is not just important for the attendees to make it seamless for them. You also don't want it to be a complicated process for the people who are actually working and running these events.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, events are tedious and it takes a lot to deliver them. They're complex, again, depending on the size and the format of the event. So the last thing you need is technology to complicate the process even more. And in many cases, you know, it almost like puts off certain functions or certain team members from wanting to utilize the max. So very often you see people doing what needs to be done for something to be delivered, but you don't always have the time, you know, to look into it properly and see what else is there. How can I improve it? How can I deliver a better experience basically for people? So I think that's where I also see a big opportunity for the product function essentially coming to the events to show us ways of how can you explore that faster and be productive and get the rest of the functions on that journey with you as well.
Yeah, because we're juggling so many different things. Time, you know, and the cost associated with people's time is so much more critical now than it was before we had all these different means available to us. I mean, you were just saying just before we came on air and started recording today, you know, the people having to mute Teams channels and things like that, and put Do Not Disturb, because we're so connected. There's so much stuff being input into us all the time from our own colleagues before we even start looking what further afield in how we run and plan our events, that organization and time management, I think, is more critical than it's ever been in the industry.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's why, you know, you also very often have the whole problem of copy-paste year after year. You know, you see very often events are staying the same because no one has the time to just sit down and look at it. I know, you know, you do the post-event surveys and you get feedback on what you can improve, and there are some quick wins there. But I think, you know, there are some events that they've had the same format for, let's say, you know, 10, 15 years. And at some point you're going to have to, you know, do something about it. And supposedly, you know, technology is there to help you overcome some of those challenges, right? Automate processes, project managing, you know, being able to do all of that a lot more efficiently. But I guess if that is not done right, it can backfire and actually cause a lot more work other than taking off your plate.
Yeah, and I don't know if people are still copying and pasting events, you know, year and year, and, oh, we did that last year and we've always done it like that for 10 years, so we'll do it the same. There's a number of red flags there, isn't it? I don't know any event that doesn't use technology in one shape or form now. It might be a small part of how they operate. It could be a big part of how they operate. But fundamentally, there's nobody that doesn't use email. You know, so we're using technology and digital calendars, you know, we're using it in some way, shape or form. And there are ways and means to analyze even email data and basic information. So events that are still copying, pasting are either, well, they're probably not listening to their audiences, and they're not using the information that's probably available to them to actually understand how they can grow and develop and evolve. Do you think there that people, again, going back to the question of time, is it that they don't have the time to analyze that data, or the understanding of how important it could be, or a combination of both?
I think it's a combination of both. I think, you know, I've seen it even in some of the teams I work with in the past, where you physically don't have the time, you know, to sit down and properly analyze things or speak to people. So it can be that. But I think it's also how sometimes the teams are also set up. Like, I've seen in the past cases where you have the different functions of sales, marketing, operations, content. They all have their own goals. They're all trying to achieve something where I think in order to achieve that innovation and that improvement and being able to stay ahead and always grow with your market and go along that journey together, you really have to have those functions very, very well aligned. So they almost have, you know, common goals and they work towards the same target. And then on the other side, I think from a commercial point of view as well, you know, there is so much pressure on targets and delivering commercial targets that very often it basically overtakes the value to attendees, for example. And I think that's how I personally define the innovation piece. When you are able to create new commercial paths, hit your commercial targets, but you balance that off with the attendee engagement and being able to deliver what people are coming to your event for. And very often you'll have the data, but it's almost, in many cases, it's a matter of, do you know how to utilize the data? Do you know how to translate that data into actions that they're easily executed by your teams?
And it's always it will be, you know, until time ends, something that the event organizers, particularly trade shows and conferences, will experience, is that balance between delivering what the attendee is ultimately there for and meeting the commercial targets. You know, if you ask most attendees why they're at a particular event that's also maybe got a really good educational conference strand that runs alongside it, you know, I'm not sure what the results would be, but a lot of people will go to it because they're there for the conference side of things. They want to come and learn from a professional development point of view. They want to sit in those sessions and educate themselves. So their primary reason for coming won't be necessarily to speak to exhibitors and to sponsors, but ultimately without those sponsors, the event can't happen. And it's a continued struggle, isn't it, to make sure that balance is met, that sometimes when commercial targets are maybe not at the expectation that an organization would like, that you still deliver the content that the audience want to see, because you need to retain that audience.
Yeah, and I always find it fascinating in cases where, you know, I speak to a lot of different teams, whether it's informal or external as well, or people across the globe that organize events. And I always like asking, you know, it's quite easy to understand what the nature of the event is from a website, or who's the exhibitor, who's coming to sell, essentially. But I'm always very curious to find out more about the visitor, who's your buyer, what are they looking for, how do they go about the sourcing, you know, and all of that. And it always fascinates me how little sometimes people know about the visitors, because, you know, in most cases, you'll have your sales team that, whether you want or not, they'll have to speak to exhibitors, they'll get feedback from there, you understand that, you know, selling journey and what they're looking for and their objectives. But on the other side, who is really speaking to visitors? And I'm not talking about doing a survey once, twice a year. I'm talking about actually, you know, understanding what are they there for? How long does the buying cycle take? What are their challenges? Who do they need involved in there? So I think there's also a big opportunity there, like by understanding your visitors. There is so many different commercial paths that can come along.
Do we, when it comes to that sort of line of, I suppose, questioning, if you will, do we rely too heavily on digital communication now to do that? Is there still a place where on our show floors, for example, we could have people from the organisers actually going around and just speaking to people face to face, gathering some information, having conversations with people on the show floor? Do we do that enough?
I don't want to say no. I'm sure there's people out there who actually do it, but I think there is definitely room for improvement in there. And I wouldn't say it's the easiest thing to do, right? Whether it's online or on site, you know, I've experienced a lot in last year, well, the year before now, 2022, where I've been to a lot of events trying to understand the visitor experience. And sorry about that, my headphone just left. Where I would walk around the show floor and I'm trying to find the visitors, right? And in many cases, you now have lack of budgets where you can't really see from far away, and you're a visitor, an exhibitor. And, you know, people have their own things to do. It can be quite awkward, you know, stopping a random person and be like, hey, can I speak to you? I want to know about your experience, blah, blah, blah. Some people are not really open to it. They're like, I have somewhere to be. But I think you can find people who are passionate enough about the industry and they care about their budgets and their time spent at the event, who are open to speaking to that. But again, I don't think any of that needs to be limited to the 2-3 days of your event. I think, as you said, digital, you can reach out to people and speak to them almost at any time throughout the year. So I think change can happen at any point. And very often, as event people, I think we're like, oh yeah, on site, we'll do it on site. We'll reach out to people on site. We'll find out about this on site, where you just pick up the phone and you can, well, a Teams or a Skype, whatever it is, and you can find things out at any time of the year.
Do you find yourself, I find it really interesting speaking to event people in January, at the start of the calendar year, and asking them how significant is January for them, and the end of one year, the beginning of a new one. For some organisations, it makes no difference. They're operating events all year round, and so there's a constant analysis, re-evaluation of how they're doing things. For other companies, January can often represent a time where they do take stock, analyse a little bit, set some targets for the year, set some goals. How does it work, I suppose, as a business, but for yourself personally, do you take time working in the industry that you do to actually, in January, set some targets and personal goals for the year and what you'd like to achieve?
I want to say yes, but it's not only because it's January. I think it has just been, you know, our biggest events are usually around May, so it's high peak time in terms of preparation and getting ready for site. So January has been a quite important year in general. And it's also, you know, for Informa at least, it's also aligned with a year of goals development and of year reviews and all of that. So it's sure. definitely an important month for us.
Mm. How much of a you work in the industry as a career, and I think you said earlier on it's not for everybody, this industry. You know, some people come into it, they spend a brief period of time, they realize, no, it's not for me, and they'll go off and do other things. The people who love it really love it, and they tend to be in there then for their careers, maybe with other companies, but you know, sometimes with one. Do you find that you have from a personal point of view, regardless of the fact that you're working for Informa as a business, what's the sort of sense of belonging that you have personally as working in the events industry? Presumably it's something that you're proud of and you love being part of that.
It's okay. So the first, let's say 9-10 years I spent with the Virus brand, if you had asked me, what do you do for a living? I would never say, I don't think I would say I work for Informa. I always said, I worked for Vitafoods. Like, I was very much part of, I felt part of that industry. So I didn't see myself as an event organizer. Maybe I did at the very beginning, at the very early stage of my career. But as the years went by and, you know, I understood the industry, the clients, I had a lot of connections. I very much saw myself as part of that industry, contributing to something bigger other than just organizing an event. Which, you know, I was very passionate about it. Most of my circle was around the industry as well. Obviously, the last couple of years felt different because I went from a brand into working for Informa Markets EMEA. So yeah, now definitely part of Informa. And yeah, I would say, you know, I've been quite either at the nutraceuticals industry that I worked before, and also now from an Informa point of view, I do have that sense of belonging. I think it's the people you work with, the environment, from a culture point of view, it's very, very important. And I think I would find it quite hard to work for the events industry. Oh, hello. To work for the events industry if I didn't have that sense of belonging, right? So events is all about people, connections, belonging, and moving an industry forward. So yeah, I don't see how you could do this job without feeling like you belong.
Absolutely. And then I speak from personal experiences. There's a huge sense of personal pride that I get and achievement when I finish working on any sort of job. You know, it could be a one-man job that I do as a freelancer, where it's just me and some AV equipment and a small business conference somewhere. But you know, I could do that. But and then similarly, I could work on Event Tech Live in Las Vegas and be out there for 2 weeks, and I kind of get the same level of personal satisfaction and pride from wrapping up at any size of event and thinking I've done a good job there. You know, people went away and everyone was happy with what happened, and I think that more so than other industries, we tend to go above and beyond as well, you know, and that's organizers, suppliers, attendees. You know, I've never met a supplier that I've worked with on any event who hasn't at some point been asked by me or somebody else in the team to do something that they, not that they weren't meant to do, but they didn't know that they were going to do. And I think we are, as an industry and as people, I think if there's one common thing that we all share, it's that instinct to go above and beyond if somebody does ask you to do something. I don't know if that's the same experience for you.
Yeah, 100%. It's almost like it's never good enough. There is always room for improvement one way or another, right? There is so many different aspects to an event. It can never be perfect. You can always do something more. And I also feel like you need to have that. If you ask me, like, my biggest quality is basically my curiosity. Like, I ask the most questions out of the people I know, always, whether I speak to someone internally, someone externally, a client, a visitor, whoever that person is. I just love asking questions, you know, finding out more, because that's how you find, essentially, you know, how to move forward, how to improve things, and stay ahead of the market. Mm. And back to your, you know, that sense of accomplishment. I mean, my favorite 5 minutes of a year was every time I was at an event, like the Vitafood event primarily that I worked full time on. that first 3 minutes of the event opening, right? So if the event is opening at 10, at 9:58, you will find me in a corner somewhere hidden in the registration area, just seeing people coming in and the whole event coming to life. And without sound cheesy, like sometimes it's quite emotional, like to see everything coming together. And then you speak to people like my dad, and you're like, oh my God, the event was so good. And I'm, you know, so pleased. And he's like, just an event. I don't understand why. You know, it's quite hard to explain that to someone who hasn't experienced it.
Yeah, I guess it's the physical manifestation of what we've worked on, you know, blindly in some respects.
Yeah.
Given that, you know, we conduct our communications over email or Slack or Teams, you know, all these digital platforms that we use. And same with our marketing now, that there's very little physical manifestation of our marketing, not in the way that we would have done 10, 15, 20 years ago in terms of print advertising. Yeah. You know, it's all digital. So the first sort of physical manifestation that we see of our event is when you get to this venue and you see it being built and constructed and things taking shape. But like you said, when those doors actually open, the real thing is suddenly you see queues of people at registration ready to come into you. You don't know these people. You have no idea where they've come from or who they are, what they do. But there are people there who are obviously there because of the work that you've done, ultimately. And it's difficult to sort of explain that to people who don't work in the industry.
Yeah.
You know, because they don't quite understand what that six-month process might be to suddenly open some doors and see people have actually turned up is a great thing. Same with, you know, maybe a live event selling tickets, you know, to do all the planning and the marketing and then put the tickets on sale and see them sell out in 3 or 4 hours. You know, there's people in the background who must take a huge sense of pride from doing that. You know, commercial targets have obviously been met, but similarly, there's that personal pride that I think drives a lot of people in the industry forward.
Yeah, 100%.
And it's a drug. It's a drug. People.
People have said it before.
It's the drug. Maria, thanks for taking a bit of time out on a busy Monday to have a chat with us on the podcast. As we start to look at wrapping up today's episode, as we get towards that sort of time, if people wanted to continue a conversation with you or get in touch with you, do tell us how they can maybe track you down before we wrap up today.
Yeah, I think LinkedIn is probably the best way at this day and age. You know, Maria Sideropoulou, I think it's quite easy to find me. I actually don't think there is that many out there, definitely not another one in the events industry that I came across. So yeah, I'll be more than happy to chat to anyone who might want to continue the conversation.
Fabulous. Thank you very much, Maria, for joining us today. And before we wrap up today's episode of the podcast, do make sure that if you're listening to the podcast today via your podcast platform, that after you finish listening to this episode today, you head over to eventindustrynews.com. You can, of course, there find the latest news, features and supplements, all related to the wider events industry, all the different strands, whether that be live music, festivals, conferences, trade shows, experiential, brand activation. All of those different elements of this wonderful thing that we call the events industry are represented on the eventindustrynews.com website. So do head over there. You can, of course, also find the A to Z supplier directory. If you are working in the events industry and you're looking for a particular service, a product or a supplier, the chances are you'll find it on the A to Z supplier directory over on the website, as well as video versions of all of our podcasts. Of course, you may have started your journey there today already and be watching the video version of this podcast. If you have done that, thank you very much for tuning in. Don't forget to have a little look around the rest of the Event Industry News website whilst you are here, but also subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast from. It could be Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify. We're on all of those platforms and on YouTube as well. So please, if you tune in regularly to this, please make sure that you are subscribed so that you get notified of all the latest episodes as they drop each week. Thank you very much, everybody, for joining the podcast today. Perfect timing. The doorbell's just rang and the dogs start shouting. So we shall end today and see you on next week's edition of the Event Industry News podcast. Goodbye, everybody.